very warm up and stuff. He was joining us in the United States and riding around the world. And he's quite in London. And we are following breaking news coverage of the war in Ukraine. And just a heads up here.
There is no exit in this large country that is truly safe.
The hillsides are rocking. The houses go down. We barely escaped. Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity are beyond doubt. Our goal is obvious. Peace and the restoration of normal life in our native state as soon as possible.
Since Putin is increasing this effect, since Putin is increasing the effort to put down human innocent civilians, we urge the attack to do that. I will begin this now with new reports of Russian strikes and targets in western and west central Ukraine overnight. With a military report that at least one missile was fired from neighboring towers. That word comes after the advisor, President Volodymyr Zelensky, said Russia was stepping up missile strikes right across the country. He named several cities as the targets overnight, including three to the west of the capital and Kharkiv, as you can see on your map, to the east. The advisor tweeted that more and more missiles are pounding Ukraine every day, with Russia, quote, partly bombing the hard city, and these new attacks coming as President Zelensky gave an interview to a group of independent Russian journalists. Russia's media watchdog has no news about the country is broadcasting it. On Tuesday, Russia was claiming that the deaths on the ground in Turkey. And ahead of that, President Zelensky said the country is now ready to accept neutral, non-nuclear status, as he shared his post to the link to the ship's post.
Our priorities and negotiations are known. Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity are beyond doubt. Effective security guarantees for our state are mandatory. Our goal is obvious. Peace and the restoration of normal life in our native state as soon as possible.
Well, meanwhile, Ukrainian forces have pushed back the Russian military in some rural areas outside of Kyiv, but intense fighting had already taken a head to enforcement over the old villages.
Shevchenko survived, but not Berchelsky. A statue of the Ukrainian poet still stands after almost everything else was wiped out by a Russian airstrike. The library was empty. Residents take the books they might have once borrowed. The temple was destroyed too, and the shop, the kids, and the pharmacy, and even the off license. Mishiv is a village 1 hour from Kyiv, and it tells two stories. The crater reveals the force of Russian might. But there's a story of failure too. More than a month into this war, life of sorts carries on. The Russian troops never arrived, although plans were made to stop getting in. Maybe the most interesting thing to see is not the fact this place was flattened, but the fact that it was converted into submission. In the capital, monuments are being protected as history is rewritten. Because, met with a fierce resistance, Moscow now says it no longer wants to focus on the capital. But the Ukrainians don't believe that.
We don't see any withdrawal of Russian troops from certain areas of Kyiv.
Because you need to go far from Kyiv to see the area around it was in Russia's sights until not long ago. And the strategists protecting the capital believe nothing has changed. Revit Kachu, ITV News, Bishu.
Let's go now to CNN's Phil Black, who sends us in the lead with the latest. And Phil, we have seen overnight several cities being targeted with missile strikes. This, of course, as the Ukrainian government warns Russia is trying to, quote, wipe Ukraine off the face of the earth. What more can tell us about these strikes tonight?
That's dramatic. Seeing there's like is about 20,000 Ukrainians that are, I mean, sorry, 20 million Ukrainians that are still in Ukraine.
Russian naval ships in the Black Sea, and now also we're being told across the northern border with Belarus, targeting
more
logistics sites that are helping Ukraine maintain its military defense.
I think they have 35 million, and close to 4 million have left as refugees, and then about 7 million have been displaced internally. So like two-thirds of them haven't even been displaced or had to move or do anything, or haven't felt inclined to. It's a big country. Maybe some areas people just feel like they're going to be perfectly fine, and they don't got to go.
Or possibly more food depot sites hit in that time. And in addition to that, there's been striking weapons storage facilities and so forth. These are the sorts of sites that Ukraine needs in order to continue fighting off the Russian attack.
And Phil, meanwhile, we are expecting to see restart diplomatic efforts in Turkey. What are the expectations where you are for the next round of talks here?
The expectations are still very low, so no one is expecting a breakthrough on this anytime soon. There has been some talk of optimism and hope and constructive progress, particularly about those issues that Vladimir Zelensky has talked about again today, the idea of neutrality and promising not to join NATO and so forth. It is understood that Ukraine could possibly move and make concessions on those points, but that said, there are other very important points that Ukraine is not prepared to move on. That's why you hear Zelensky talking about territorial integrity and security guarantees. What that means is he is not prepared to give up any Ukrainian territory, not prepared to recognize Russia's annexation of Crimea or the independence of those eastern breakaway regions as Russia is demanding. And he is also expecting that any peace deal would include a security guarantee of the sort that would see other countries coming to Ukraine's aid in the event that it would be attacked at some point. There is a lot of progress to make on these sorts of points. And as I say, no obvious route for concessions yet.
Yeah, and how do you balance, of course, on that very point? You know, the non-nuclear, but also the safeguarding of the country, I think that's really important. Phil Black, for us, and you, thanks very much for this evening. And so I had right from the show, President Joe Biden's advertised about that decision, are there mixed reactions in Europe? Why some leaders are distancing themselves from this policy? That's it.
One rescue group facing Ukraine's humanitarian crisis and helping to evacuate civilians and providing medical care and supplies to those in need.
Bert Bryant, president of the Humanitarian Aid and Rescue Project, joins me now. Good morning to you, Bert. Tell us what you can about your mission in Ukraine.
Thank you for having us here. We're a United States humanitarian aid organization that specializes in extractions. Right now we're doing multiple operations, pushing medical supply and creating routes into hot zones, I guess you could say, to get those supplies into the frontline soldiers. Aside from that, we're also doing extractions for people from hard-hit places. So that's kind of what we're doing. Intelligence units running mapping systems and things like that out of the past right now. They basically push us into
you're doing is extremely risky. Your group is highly skilled in operating in some of the dangerous conditions in the world, and you're doing such great work. So if anybody at home wants to donate, you can go to harprescue.org to help out. Burke Bryant, you're one of the good guys. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
They took out the commercials and they took out What's Next. We'd probably get half the show back. We'd make the broadcast to show this twice as well. Keeping track of the missiles that have been shot on March 18th, about 3 weeks after the war, they said 1,080 missiles have been shot by Russia into Ukraine. That's about 50 a day. And then one of the ladies working in parliament just said they shot 70 into the country the other day.
Make offensive moves and advance major cities, actually key. So what they're doing is they're digging in and trying to regroup, rearm, and reconstitute
the Alessia Vazilenko. That's how I would say it, but I don't know how she said it.
And I think that what we're entering is a period of stalemate and a pause at the operational level, which is the major campaign across the entire country, whilst the Russians regroup and the Ukrainians essentially carry out
series of counter-offensives. So they're really strange. But explain to our viewers, Malcolm, I mean, how the Russian forces can keep this going. I mean, they don't have their swift victory as they perhaps expected.
This is almost like Afghanistan. There's been a vested interest by Americans here. And they don't want to just let it go. And then that's an interest in liberalism.
All the while, they're bombarding cities with
I can see it in our parliamentarians that speak English on Twitter. How they are part of sort of American liberal fundamentalism. And that's just the way that they were headed, and that's a more natural party for them or whatever.
I mean, from the Ukrainian side, of course, the game, but like Peter pointed out,
how weird.
Very fragile games, nevertheless. What do you think, Malcolm, of the idea that's being discussed? That Russia's aim here is to split the country into two, so the occupied and the non-occupied territory. What do you make of this idea?
I think that's certainly their aim initially. Certainly, that's the sort of approach they'll be using in any negotiation over a settlement that they keep the
Donbass, that was interesting.
They keep Crimea, obviously, and the Ukrainians have to accept that in return for the Russians not resuming the war. Now, of course,
It doesn't look like Russia has the entire Donbass, according to what they're saying. They're saying that the separatists occupy a part of LPR and DPR, but then they're fighting against the Ukraine forces to take over all of it and both of it. Looks like about half of it.
Shall we say, risky tactics they've done in this particular
phase.
They're not going to do that again.
And then
the
path to Crimea,
so
maybe Kharkiv, too.
The Russians now basically say, we don't have intentions of taking Kyiv, we are not interested in Kyiv. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. I think the perspective is still wants
If they can just lob in hundreds and hundreds of missiles from Russia, then they could just blast away everything from a distance and soften it up, soften the targets, and then go in with military and occupy it or whatever.
So ultimately, I don't think this war ending anytime soon, and it's, I think we're going into a pause that could last some weeks, potentially some months, going into the northern spring and summer, and then pick up again.
So for the Ukrainian military then, whilst there is this pause on the Russian side, how would you expect them to move? What would the Ukrainian side be doing whilst there is a pause of the Russians regrouping tactically?
Well, two things. Remember that the pause is only for the maneuver forces, the tanks and the armored fighting vehicles.
Ukraine needs to invent something.
The artillery fire,
you know, all these weapons, all these things.
Yeah. So the Ukrainians still have to respond.
That have been invented
to
over
challenge.
The
but at the same
over
time,
the years. You need to invent some way to win.
From the West.
Some special weapon.
And so
they really should have dealt with this in 2014. And Poroshenko didn't. Obama just did a sanctions thing, didn't solve the problem.
Any offensive down the track. And also
Trump didn't fix it.
Diplomatic negotiation towards
and then Zelensky hasn't
so
just made it worse.
But they probably don't have the strength at this point in time to decisively.
They should have just negotiated from the beginning because Russia's going to flatten everything and then do whatever they want to do. And whatever
yeah,
there happens is still going to happen after everything's flattened.
Relentless, relentless,
he's in Mariupol, I mean, he's each in circles. What do you expect in terms of this next round of forces?
Zelensky is not a war leader.
He didn't have all the connections lined up for this, to prepare for this to happen. And so we're over a month in it, and he's already lost a lot.
Yeah, I think he's in a difficult position. He knows that ultimately the Russians gradually bring in additional forces and once again restart the offensive. And he's depending very much on Western support in terms of military hardware.
Now he might get a lot. He's gotten all kinds of donations and gifts and money. And that'll be good in the long run. They're going to have to hire people to bulldoze the concrete and
aviation support. And he's not getting that. And
you know,
so
deal with unexploded ordnance and
negotiations,
fix everything if they win, which is definitely not a certainty. It's a long shot.
In terms of avoiding,
it depends on everybody else.
The country being divided in two. And I don't think that this negotiating settlement is ultimately.
If he would have been a smart kid, he would, on day one, he would have reached out to Putin and just kept on bugging him until he met him and made friends with him.
Martin Davis, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Martin Davis, General Superintendent of Commission.
Thank you.
US officials are trying to walk back US President Joe Biden's final remarks. Remember that Vladimir Putin on Sunday.
God's sake, this man cannot remain
calm. Mr. Biden dropped the tough remarks that he did at the end of his opponent, and then it sent shockwaves around the globe. The White House,
say whatever he wants, but if they want to fix this, they really need to go back to the initial problem, and that was in the Donbass region of Russia saying there's genocide against the Russian, ethnic Russian people, and then war broke out and hell broke loose. And so if they really need to investigate that claim right there and either debunk it or deal with it. because Russia's dealing with it because they're not doing anything or debunking. Because it's a very serious claim, and people are used to just going, "Oh, Russia's a bunch of liars. Russia's lying. They're always lying." And if they're not lying about this, then I don't know how they feel. They feel very real justified in this war. That's for sure. And this isn't something that's never happened before. There's been other cases where people from one country live across the border in another country and they're mistreated in that country. A genocide is a real, is a high bar. But maybe they were mistreated somewhere, shape, or form.
But is, what he is aiming to do in the interim before trying to bring an overall...
Or maybe not. Maybe they were the instigators.
But see, that's...
It's been too vague, the reporting on that part. Because I just got to do my own research.
The sort of language that President Biden is using, that he...
But I'm going to end up having to read a whole bunch of papers that aren't the normal papers, probably.
And anything that detracts from that and potentially escalates the war...
Like all kinds of foreign ones and smaller ones and things.
But you sort of highlight the position...
Imagine Macron and Putin have the type of relationship where they've joked around about invading other countries. And, and he probably assured Macron that he wasn't going to invade all of Europe, but threatened him that if he stops him or messes with him, then he's going to feel it and stay out of it.
But there was,
I imagine.
We did hear disappointment from his office after those talks and subsequent conversations with President Trump.
Problems are unsolvable.
But we ask all the civilized countries to provide us with all the tools necessary in order not only to defend us, to defend Europe, but also...
At least this one's not hundreds and hundreds of years old, but something like the Israelis and Palestinians. Imagine trying to go back to the beginning of that. Like when, I mean, you can go back to 1948 when Israel was declared a country.
What's your reaction?
But you could probably even trace problems with Israel back from other countries even way further than that.
And we really appreciate it, and we would like everyone to be with us in the most possible way.
And it's like, who did what first?
We all understand.
They did this because they did this, and they did that because they did that, and they did that because they did that. And for now, it's like a big, gigantic mess. With both sides doing horrible things, and you're going, look, why in the world would they do this? And then the other side does something, and you're like, why in the world would they do this? And it's just like a tit for tat cycle of revenge.
It's an act of war criminal. That's why we have opened investigation in Ukraine. That's why Ukraine's
security. And with better surveillance and stuff, it could be even more targeted than people realize.
And yes, Vladimir Putin, together with everyone, every Russian that is responsible for it, will have to end up in jail. So yes, we have nothing to do to leave a state if Russia would like to be a different people for even the civilized.
You're saying that they should be
kinds of journalists on
Twitter. New York City. Sean, good morning to you. When you heard this move by internet,
we're talking vaccines here. Adams denies double standard on vaccine mandate.
Adams.
Okay, the mayor of New York. Sean Kilcoyne, unvaccinated New York City sanitation
worker. 1,430 New York City workers were fired, for refusing the COVID-19
vaccine. Yeah, it's funny. We're starting to turn the corner with COVID, and there's a lot fewer deaths. So I'm not counting them every day after they hit a million. It's been going down. It could go back up, but it's been going down. And now it's sort of the aftermath where people are second guessing and going, well, look, we had to wear masks. That was stupid, but we shouldn't be vaccinated. Government went crazy, kind of thing. But it's pretty much a joint problem, joint errors.
But
first time these people
have
dealt with anything like it.
You said that you had hope. It may be misplaced hope, because here is Eric Adams on if he's going to be doing it.
Most of the guys around my time are the most advanced. The new guys coming on have a lot of
It's really just a question of how much Ukraine is going to lose at this point.
But there are still ways that
and whether they stop and negotiate before they lose everything or if they don't.
Trying to reach out to ordinary Russians and answering a lot of questions, not just on the war and ongoing.
Because I still don't think, even if they get, even if every other country around the planet gave the Ukrainians the best weapons there are, I still think the Russians would win eventually. So I think some of their armies are going to have to physically intervene for Ukraine to win.
And he also addressed the issue of language itself, saying that.
Well, I don't think Russia has a big problem switching to a war economy and producing all kinds of missiles and tanks. I heard their only tank factory was bombed, but I think if people think that's their only tank factory, then they'll probably be okay.
This is something he is willing to discuss in any ongoing negotiations. So it was a very, widespread.
War helps some economies because people make. It stimulates all kinds of industries, from mining to production. And if Russia's economy, this whole thing is ripe for Russia just to keep going. And never stop, because the West is already driving a wedge.
I've lived here since my birth, my husband as well. We got married here and had babies.
With all the consequences.
What now? What is left for us? I don't want to go anywhere from Mariupol, but there's nowhere to live here.
Well, this comes, of course, as the Ukrainian officials say humanitarian aid is beginning to wane. They say more support is desperately needed right now. According to the UN, more than 3.8 million people have fled Ukraine.